We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello! Welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Thank you, wonderful listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. This podcast is made possible from a generous grant, from a very surprising source this episode, from One Nation outsourcing work that could be going to Australians to foreign countries. For years, Australians have asked, how do we stop globalisation? And One Nation's answer? Well, by participating in it as aggressively as possible. Whether it's creating Facebook pages, producing campaign materials, or animating a cartoon about Australian politics, international foreign labour's highly skilled workforce is standing by to help you maximise your hypocrisy. Marvel as jobs that could have gone to local workers embark on an incredible overseas adventure. You know, white people travelling to Asia to find themselves has been a bit of a cliche for decades. Now, we want to offer white people the chance to travel to Asia in order to find Asian workers. So instead of finding themselves, they can find somebody else. Experience the fiery rhetoric of economic nationalism that is quietly powered by imported labour, because nobody fights harder for Australian workers than somebody employing workers somewhere else. And it's all thanks to One Nation's new economic model, Schrodinger's Foreigner. A foreign worker is simultaneously stealing Australian jobs and performing Australian jobs outsourced by One Nation. They're saving you money on their hateful rhetoric by sending it to be created overseas. It's quantum nationalism, guys. All jobs are fulfilled in Australia until observed by an accountant. One Nation, where every job is sacred, unless there's a cheaper one overseas. It's a brilliant closed-loop ecosystem, really, if you think about it. Outsource the work, complain about outsourcing, get elected by people impacted and angry about that outsourcing, then outsource more work. One Nation, turning hypocrisy into employment opportunities for foreigners since 1997. And this is a bit of an exclusive, guys. They've actually allowed us to unveil their newest campaign slogan. Are you ready? It's exciting. One Nation, Australian values, international labour. Thrilling. It's really thrilling to be. Maybe it's because I have red hair that they've given me this opportunity to, you know, to announce their campaign like that. But to be on the forefront of such a movement, well, crazy. But look, as thankful as we are for One Nation outsourcing work that could go to Australians out to foreign countries instead for their support, this is really only possible due to the generous support of loyal viewers slash listeners like yourselves who continue to make all of this possible over at patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you, the supporters of the Bullshit Arts. And you can continue to support the Bullshit Arts live and in person at one of my upcoming live shows. So first, I would just like to say, I just got back from a EU tour, and I want to thank the good people of Brighton, Basel in Switzerland, and Prague for turning out on my tiny little EU tour. It was really fun. It was a great time. I got to tell some old stories and tell them to new crowds. It was really exciting. I'm looking forward to expanding out into the EU and do some more touring out there. But at the moment, I'm looking forward to bringing the newest version of my show, Jokes About the Time I Got Detained in America and Other Stories, to the Melbourne Fringe. I'll be doing two different venues in the Melbourne Fringe, so apologies if that gets a little confusing. 5th of October until the 11th of October at the Motley Warehouse, which is quite close to quite close to the Vic Market, and a shorter run from the 15th of October to the 18th of October at a place called Transcendence. Now, if you saw the last run of the show, you'll know Transcendence, the venue. That's where I did it last time. It's in Collingwood. It's a beautiful little venue with the trains on the roof. That's probably what you'd most know it for. But until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So, let's get into the headlines. The 2027 World Esperanto Congress will be held in Melbourne. I have, I'll tell you, unnecessarily strong feelings on Esperanto as a language, given it's a made-up language that practically nobody speaks. And this might be my only chance to ever let those ideas out. So I'm just going to say it now. I'm just going to put it out there and see how we land. Esperanto is the cryptocurrency of languages, in that it could have been a good thing, but it was exclusively adopted by douchebags who are looking to prove that they're better than you. And you tell you what, it's fun to root against it, because when it dies, it won't actually drag down a country or a culture with it, because it's a made-up language. It has less culture than yogurt. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of made-up languages spoken exclusively by nerds, but none of those languages claim to attempt to solve a problem of any kind. But when your made-up language is used less than the people who speak Klingon, it's time to accept that this language has officially failed and move on. The Victorian government has announced the state's anti-corruption watchdog will receive new powers. Ooh, how exciting. What kind of new powers can we expect? Flight? Super speed? Time travel? I think time travel would be really useful for an anti-corruption watchdog. So what can we expect from this new rollout of powers? It turns out they will receive follow-the-money powers, which will allow IBAC to pursue taxpayer funds through subcontracting arrangements and labour-hiring companies, which is great. It's what they need. It's what they've been calling for. It's not going to get them on the Avengers, but it will prove a powerful tool for sniffing out corruption, you know, until they actually catch someone of significance who is committing corruption, and then the powers are abruptly neutered. But good hunting, IBAC. Make sure it's a good one before all of those powers get taken away. Weirdly beloved bath mat Agro has been donated to the National Film and Sound Archive in Canberra following the passing of puppeteer and man whose memorial was mostly just the phrase, it was a different time, Jamie Dunn. The puppet will be placed in the Hall of Horrifying Childhood Oddities next to EC and the disembodied face from Molly Grubbs, who, nightmarish fact, is not only still alive, but was actually living on Little St. James Island, feasting on the blood of children until they shut the whole island down. Milli Vanilli has dropped out of the Freedom 250 concert celebrating America's bicentennial after discovering they were misled about the event, going on to say that they refused to pretend to sing at the event. After more and more artists dropped out of the concert, Trump declared that he would instead headline the Freedom 250 concert with a four-hour-long rambling rant about the Middle East, Joe Biden, windmills, the left, and top it all off with a YMCA dance-along. When he declared that he'd be taking over the duties, he actually ended up comparing himself to Elvis, which I guess is true, as he is also an old man who doesn't drink, abuses drugs, and could die on the toilet any minute now. One Nation leader Pauline Hanson has offered up a defence spending plan that would cost taxpayers an estimated extra $400 billion over 4 years, which is more than the entire cost of the much maligned AUKUS program, and require a combination of tax increases, massive budget cuts, and possibly the reintroduction of conscription. Now, to be fair, I think she's just reading the tea leaves at this point. Conscription does seem extremely likely, as young people are preparing for the inevitable civil war if Pauline Hanson were to actually be voted in as Prime Minister. And they say that the youth have no motivation. After SpaceX debuted on the NASDAQ exchange, walking jizz dispenser Elon Musk has become the world's first trillionaire, proving all those people who said money can't buy happiness were actually correct, as he remains a Nazi-sympathizing, space-polluting, insufferable cunt. On the same day, he also took the title of the worst thing to have ever come out of South Africa, which, admittedly, is a very impressive achievement. Demand for New Zealand's golden visa are rising. Golden visas allow wealthy foreigners to get permanent residency through investing in the local economy. Generally, those investments are in construction companies, digging equipment, and end-of-the-world bunkers. Real estate agent clients claim that they're not political refugees looking to leave because of the Trump administration. Obviously not. They're just people who view New Zealand as more of a secure and safe place in general. But I guess the question remains, more secure from what exactly? Who could say? Who could say? Could be hubris. Could be the lack of investment in the working class. All we know for sure is that they seem to feel especially safe after they have discovered the world's largest supply of natural bouncers, the Maori people, who will of course be hired to stand outside bunkers and tell Mad Max-style marauders, i.e. Australian backpackers, yeah, not in those leathers, mate. Obviously, I'm not going to do the accent, guys. Grow up. The Nationals have urged the Albanese government to examine if the excess wine stored in Australia could be converted to biofuels to help stymie the effects of a supply shortage. Aww, looks like the Nationals are once again trying to push something most people won't get behind that is entirely fueled by alcohol. They must really be missing Barnaby Joyce since he defected to One Nation. You know, they might have tapped into something here. After all, drink driving is very popular in Australia, so why not outsource it directly to the car, you know what I mean? Well, now you can do that with one of these new Australian-made cars, these Goonmobiles. The Toyotonic, Jim BMW, the Subaru, the Grange Rover, and for the ladies, please do consider driving around a Shirazda. The South Australian government has paid an undisclosed sum to bring the Michelin star system to Adelaide for its Australian debut. Three Star Food in Adelaide was the name of my grungecore band back in the 2000s. Ah, who would have thought we'd be relevant again? Oh, I will say, setting the Michelin system in Adelaide is an interesting choice, given it's a city that basically closes down at 6 p.m. So we're going to have two sets of Michelin star reviews. One for the day when things are actually open, and then one for the night time when the only thing that is open is the Hindley Street McDonald's or a 24-hour petrol station. And it's a tough choice between those two because you never know which one's going to harm you more. But like all things Adelaide, if it's good enough, Melbourne will eventually end up taking it away. Except for LIV Golf. LIV Golf can fuck right off. We don't even want it in Adelaide. Take it right back. Get the fuck out of here. Millions of Pokemon Go players who spent years scanning their surroundings for in-game rewards ended up unknowingly contributing to a highly detailed navigation system developed by Niantic Spatial that is now set to be used in military drones and robots. To be honest, we should have been suspicious early on when that rare Snorlax kept showing up inside schools and hospitals. Historians may one day discover that the World War III was made possible by a guy named Kyle trying to evolve a Magikarp outside of a shopping centre. This must be the first recorded instance of a generation being drafted into military service strictly through nostalgia. Niantic, of course, insists that the data has many uses beyond defence, which is exactly what you would say if you accidentally crowdsourced military mapping from children. Genuinely, this means the most effective military reconnaissance operation of the 21st century was conducted by people walking into fountains while staring at their phones. And I don't know what to make of that. Pokemon Go has become the first game where completing side quests accidentally advanced the military-industrial complex. All of these parents were worried about Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto causing violence in real life, when all along, it was a game built around the idea of dogfighting that would actually cause the most violence in the community. Who would have guessed? The game has apparently generated billions in value, proving that the most powerful intelligence gathering network on Earth is not spies, it's not satellites, or signal interception, no. It's gamers being promised a shiny Charizard. Turns out the real legendary Pokemon was the government surveillance that we provided for free along the way. Hey, gotta map them all! Gotta map them all! Drum them on! That's the end of the headlines for this episode. Let's move on to the bigger news, starting with Eurovision news. And yes, I'm aware I'm a little behind on this one, but I was just over in the EU and then I got a little bit sick, so we're catching up on some ideas, starting with Eurovision. As I said, while I was away, Eurovision happened. All the glitz, all the glam, and desperately trying not to laugh at something that seems silly but might actually be a cultural thing. This year, Australia brought out some of its biggest guns yet in an attempt to win over the hearts and minds and ears of Europe and other Europe-adjacent countries with former neighbour star turned pop star Delta Goodrum, confirming early speculation that Delta Goodrum was indeed born to try, as she ended up taking fourth place. Though this might be because voters who are still rightfully confused about why we are even taking part in Eurovision actually mistook us for Austria, an actual country in Europe. Look, fourth is good. It's not bad at all. Like, for us, given that we've crept in and we probably shouldn't be there, and it's the best we've ever done. And I'm pretty sure the only way that we will allow to ever win Eurovision is if Kylie Minogue performs. The world cannot get enough of Kylie Minogue, and we need to capitalize on that before she gets too old to perform. There is a gaping caveat in our fourth place victory, if you can call it that, and that is that this basically only happened after five major countries boycotted the 2026 competition because of the presence of Israel, who you may have heard are guilty of committing a genocide, and we didn't end up boycotting it. Partly because I think we're like genocide bros, you know what I mean? Instead, Australia's refusal to act on Israel's genocide has paid dividends once again after we jumped from 11th place last year to 4th place this year at a heavily boycotted Eurovision Song Competition. If we can keep quietly supporting Israel, we may be able to jump all the way to first place, assuming that is that Israel gets kicked out of the competition for openly committing a genocide. I wouldn't hold my breath for it, but there's a chance. We will meet our destiny and become the Stephen Bradbury of Eurovision. You know, we just wait for more and more countries to either boycott or be kicked out, and we will creep forward and forward and forward until eventually we take it. And then we'll host Eurovision. We'll be like the only people competing in Eurovision, so then we'll have to host it again, and basically we'll just become Australia Vision. I think that's something that we'd really get into. However, seems our ambitions for hosting Eurovision and supporting Team Australia do not resonate with the modern-day coalition like they used to. As Senator Sarah Henderson used her time in Senate estimates hearings to question SBS executives on a range of issues, including the broadcaster's coverage of the conflict in Gaza, its definition of anti-Semitism, and guidance provided to journalists on how to frame reporting related to the Israel government and terrorist organization Hamas, and that most dire of all matters, why Australians didn't get behind Israel at Eurovision this year. You know, that urgent matter of why didn't we, in a global competition that we were competing in, get behind a different country? Let me just let that one settle in for a moment. It's just like a strange suggestion for a competition of nations. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but generally, countries do try to support their home team I mean, we won't be supporting Israel in the World Cup or the Olympics, so presumably we're going to be facing at least two more of these farce inquiries in the near future as we determine why, after 75 years of supporting them, unquestionably, we've stopped being on Team Israel. After all, we were both historic genociders who refused to face up to their past. Seems like a better match than Australian F-35 parts with Israeli jets. If the coalition has its way, we can finally remove the Union Jack from the corner of our flag. Granted, we will have to replace it with a picture of Benjamin Netanyahu, and we will make Benjamin Netanyahu our Governor General. That way, we can have the power to overthrow any of our elected prime ministers if he doesn't like them. You see? You see how this all works out? If I'm honest with you, good listeners, I think that at this point, Australia's government is just happy that Israel is causing enough controversy that people have actually stopped asking why Australia is even in Eurovision in the first place. So we're just going to use them as a coverage, you know, to sneak our way to the first position. Moving on now to not-so-independent news. The Teal Independents. Australia's answer to the question, but what if my only problem with the Liberal Party is that they're ignoring climate change? With the upcoming growth of One Nation's voting base and changes to political funding, the independent crossbenchers have entered into discussions about forming a centrist super party, sort of the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young of politics, if Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young were centrist enough to appeal to former Liberal Party voters, but also wrote music about broader fiscal restraint, spending cuts, and raising the goods and service tax. But also cared about the environment. They spent so long fighting the allegation that they were secretly a party simply because they were all funded by the same financiers, which, let's be honest, if that's the definition of what makes politicians a single party, then Labour and the Coalition have been one giant party pretty much the whole time. Why would they give the major parties this kind of ammunition? It just seems really weird at this point. Well, the simple reason is they got fucked by new electoral laws that cap political donations and spending largely in favour of the major parties, making it more attractive for minor players to establish a party structure. The new laws made it so that independents can spend a maximum of $800,000 campaigning in their seat. But if the independents joined forces and ran candidates in all 150 electorates, their party could tap into a national campaign budget, which is actually capped at $90 million. And a $90 million campaign chest is enough to justify becoming corrupted by external forces. Wouldn't you agree? I would certainly agree to be corrupted for $90 million. Hell, I'd do it for less than $90 million. $90 million is a lot of money. Why should it all be my money that I'm spending? Let's get some companies in here. They've got a lot to gain from this brand new party. You know, we're starting fresh, right? Remember, a bribe from a solar company is still a bribe. So let the bidding begin. How close to $90 million are you willing to spend renewable energies? This feels like the perfect opportunity for you to get on board with a brand new party and support them and force some of your renewable energies into the grid. I think it's the only way it's going to happen. Not to mention that Warringah MP Zali Stegel already improperly disclosed a $100,000 donation from the Kinghorn Family Trust, the family trust of former coal company director and founder of Rams Home Loans, John Kinghorn, and split that into eight separate pledges beneath the $13,800 disclosure limit, even though the funds were provided in a single $100,000 check, which she justified by saying, if you ruled out taking donations from anyone who has invested in coal at one time or another, you pretty much rule out everyone, as most people have through their superannuation, which is evidence that she really does have what it takes to be head of a major party. And you know what? If ruling out everybody who is invested in coal means that nobody can donate, I'm okay with that. Get it done. That is the best idea you've come up with, Zali Stegall. Let's push that one through. According to Stegall, this new centrist party will fill the void left by the Liberals' lurch to the right and to counter the rise of One Nation. Because if One Nation voters have proven anything, it's that they are interested in the middle of the road politics. Why else would they have chosen One Nation if it wasn't for their sensible middle of the road policies like embracing Australian coal, rolling back abortion laws, and cutting immigrants by capping arrivals at 130,000 a year, including New Zealanders who, you might remember, have the right to free work and travel, and Australians working and travelling overseas who would also be limited in their ability to return under these numbers. Although, they would probably argue that these people should never have left Australia in the first place and that they're traitors for not spending their money here. So basically, the Teal Independents are looking to form a party for people who want action on climate change but are too financially entrenched in capitalism to vote for the Greens. Cool. Got it. They think that voters tired of the politics of large political parties would like it if the independents that they voted for formed a large political party. But not just any old party. No, no, no. A party so centrist. How centrist is it? Ooh. A party so centrist, it wants to compromise between action and inaction. A party so centrist that it believes every argument has three sides. Yours, mine, and a lobbyist report. A party so centrist it thinks political courage is when both sides are equally disappointed. A party so centrist, yeah, I've got a few of these, every policy announcement comes with a rebuttal from within the party. A party so centrist it thinks the middle ground between a boot and a face is actually a softer, more environmentally sustainable boot. Stegall has even said the party would be unnecessary if the Liberal Party had not vacated the political middle ground. And that's the kind of absurdist talk that makes me worry about the Teal Party becoming a reality. How could you possibly think the Liberal Party were the political middle ground? Incessantly bullying poor people, refugees, and Indigenous communities while supporting big business, the rich, and foreign multinationals is not balance. That's not the political middle ground. I don't know how to take this statement seriously. Is this the reality of politics? That politicians, who should know better, think that the Liberal Party was the centre? It's crazy. And if they don't believe it, are they willing to spread that message because it makes them look better? Is that the deal? Is that where we're landing at here? Stegall herself, in the 2019 election, positioned herself as a moderate alternative, claiming that voters in Warringah had been abandoned by Abbott's right-wing rhetoric and that his political style lacked the imagination needed for the 21st century, which is unquestionably true. Tony Abbott lacks the imagination for the 16th century, let alone the 21st. But is that what you're claiming the political centre is? They've abandoned the right wing to chase the extreme right wing, while the extremist party attempts to become the major opposition, while someone on the sidelines screams, "Change, Blessers!" in some form of Mad Hatter's Tea Party scenario. So to really clear things up, that story again. Independents worried about voters going to the extreme right-wing parties think that those same voters might be convinced to change their vote by becoming the most centrist party that this country has ever seen. So centrist that they are repelled from taking sides like a magnet from its polar opposite. More on this story as it digs itself into the perceived centre of politics. Moving on now, it is semantic news. Back in 2016, Florent Montclair, a French professor, received the 2016 Gold Medal of Philology, which, as we all know, is both the study of language in historical contexts and the study of guys named Phil, from an international society of the same name, which is quite impressive. However, detectives have claimed the French professor created the award himself as part of a complex international hoax. Whoa, we've got a scammer, baby! Let's do it! For those who don't know, philology is the study of language through texts. Given that, it surprises me that nobody thought to examine the award through the historical texts of bullshittery. Granted, there are many of those tomes. We do love to create new forms of bullshit all the time. It is a lot of fun. In 2018, he had applied to the French Ministry of Higher Education for promotion, allegedly backing up his request by submitting a state doctorate awarded by the same American university. Although the qualification was not recognized in France, he was subsequently promoted and made an associate professor. Despite there being no International Society of Philology. I love it. This is such a low-stakes thing. It's so good. And the award, which was likened to a Nobel Prize, was actually invented by Montclair. And the academic had bought a medal from a jeweler in Paris for 250 euros so that he could present it to himself, which honestly makes it closer to a real Nobel Prize than this whole thing first seems. Like, the Nobel Prize is actually just a reputation laundering thing for Alfred Nobel, but that's a whole other story. Now, the professor is under investigation for suspected forgery, use of forged documents, impersonation, and fraud. And unsurprisingly, he denies any criminality. But it is his reason for denying this criminality that brings this story to this podcast. He said, inventing an international award and the society that bestowed it is not a criminal offence. Which is just so good. So fantastic. Like, this is better than Trump getting the FIFA Peace Prize. Someone else had to make that up for him. This guy's gone, nah, I can do it myself. So good. Montclair admitted ordering the medal and creating or running certain websites, but denies any wrongdoing. In his view, the medal is not a forgery. A forgery implies that there is a genuine medal, and as the genuine philological medal does not exist, his medal cannot be a forgery. Checkmate! Pedantic cunts! Saying that anyone can create a medal, which is so, so good. It's true, so good. You can order online the Best Journalist in France medal in gold, silver, or bronze, award it to yourself, and hold your own little ceremony quietly at home over drinks. Which does sound like an afternoon. A sad afternoon, but an afternoon. Which, by the way, you know he has already done. It was probably the test ceremony that he did before giving himself this philology medal. Scammers and criminals usually build up to big thefts by doing a series of smaller crimes in order to get the confidence to learn the new skills. You don't go straight to the Louvre. No! You do a series of small crimes on the way. This does pose an interesting philosophical question. If a scammer scams in the woods and nobody is there to hand over their life savings, is there even a scam happening? Think about it. This is a philological question of semantics, really. We could look deeply into the history of scams and scamming and make a moral and legal judgment on this academic for trying to survive in the publish or die world of academia. Or, hear me out here, or do we praise someone for, despite, let's be honest, blatantly running a scam, doing it for the weirdly relatable reason of getting a promotion at work and having a fancy degree that will impress your peers and family? He at least wanted more from life that wasn't just someone else's money. Because that's usually what scammers are after, right? They're trying to steal your money. No, he's not out there ripping off grandmas, no. He's not stealing from people who work for him. He's not scamming people into voting him into president. No, no, no. He just votes for himself to get a trophy. It's a real quaint scam, and we need more quaint scams. People giving themselves a trophy, you know what? Go for it. I'm all for it. Especially for a guy who, and this is quite harsh, the news stories about him have been really mean, describing him as an unremarkable teaching instructor who liked to write fantasy books, many about vampires, in his spare time. Unnecessarily mean. So unnecessarily mean. Now, here's the thing. If it wasn't just himself that he'd given the award to, he may have gotten away with it. But I think he flew a little too close to the pedantic sun, awarding the award to some names that you might recognize, like Umberto Eco and Noam Chomsky. Though this, realistically, was a smart move, because nobody's going to think twice about Noam Chomsky winning an award for language. He is on so many notable lists that we even found him in the Epstein files. So, of course, he's going to get some random philology award that nobody's heard of before. But here's the thing. It was Romanian academic Eugene Simon that would be his undoing, as Romanian journalists from the online publication Seneca 9, intrigued by the honour that was bestowed on one of their compatriots, dug deeper and discovered that the University of Philology and Education and the International Society of Philology existed solely through websites created and hosted in France. Now, these days, a university existing entirely online isn't as much of a scam as it once was, say when, for example, Donald Trump was doing it. Some legitimate universities offer entirely online courses. So those courses only exist on websites, right? I did an entire course during COVID entirely online. Sure, there was a campus where technically the teachers could exist and I would have done it had it not been COVID, but I got an entire degree online. It only existed on those websites. Despite being called out, this guy really wasn't done. He was quietly doing this for like a decade before he got busted. And look, these days, the world fucking loves a grifter. I think he's going to take a second act turn. He is ready to start running classes at PragerU, you know, the entirely online university. Unfortunately, the classes will be in some bullshit like woke philology or the history of woke words or some such bullshit nonsense. At the very least, you know, it sounds like this guy is ready to become president of the United States. I think if this guy really wanted to get away with it, he needed a Goodwill Hunting type script, you know what I mean? Think about it, because I personally had never heard of the Fields Medal until I watched Goodwill Hunting. But when I got old enough to care about these things, I did go ahead and Google it to see if it's a real thing, right? But that took a while for that to happen. So if this guy wanted to help solidify his bullshit, well, he should have made an indie film about a down-and-out janitor who works at the prestigious and completely fictional University of Philology and Education and discovers a semantic puzzle left on a board while cleaning overnight and then solves that puzzle, like, in a way that nobody else could. He could win not only a fake award from a fake university, he could win a real award from the Academy. I mean, it's just small-time thinking like this that stops these people from reaching their maximum potential. And finally, last story of the episode, it is enhanced news. Long-time listeners would know this story has been coming for a while. The Enhanced Games, the drug-taking Olympics, the Cheaters Games has actually happened. It's crazy that they went through with it. And although most news outlets reported it as an underwhelming games, seems the only thing that was really juiced up was the marketing. They sold people on the idea that we'd be watching, you know, hulked up monsters push the limits of not only the human body, but the limits of audience morale. I will say, audiences do love watching an out-of-touch, self-destructive group attempt to outdo each other for supremacy. It is the basis for both reality TV and the royal family. I'm pretty sure right now there are poly markets preparing a betting category for how many times you can inbreed a royal family member before they have a Habsburg jaw so large that they could win the Enhanced Games 100 meter sprint just by like tilting forward a little bit, a few inches, just like, you know, truly the peak of humanity as God decreed. Enhanced Games organizers proclaimed this would be a brand new era in sport where elite athletes push the limits of human performance. And like so many disappointing and overhyped things that did happen in Vegas, it refused to stay in Vegas. And now we have to hear about it. This time it was 42 athletes competing in swimming, running, and weightlifting only. Presumably the only sports with athletes desperate enough to throw it all away on this spectacle. This sort of P.T. Barnum-esque show of peak freaks. And on one level, it delivered, as Greek swimmer Christian Kolomov swam the fastest 50-meter freestyle in history, shaving a whole 0.07 seconds off Cam McAvery's legitimate world record. Because, of course, regardless of how well these athletes did, and they didn't, they don't count these as actual world records. You've got more juice in you than a grapefruit, buddy. Why do you think this would count towards actual world records? I will grant you, for winning both the 100 meter and 50 meter freestyle, he came away with a cool $2.8 million in prize money. So he's going to have a lot of money to get all the juice that he needs to shrink his testicles so much that they flatten against his torso in order to maximize his aerodynamics so that he can destroy that 100 meter world record, unofficially, of course. He also had to wear a super suit that has actually been banned by World Aquatics for about a decade and a half. So this is what it took in order for these guys to outdo the actual athletes. Banned clothes and juice into the gills. Maybe even the installation of actual gills, I don't know. Of the 22 personal best performances produced across 79 individual efforts on the day, three were produced by swimmers that were not on the juice. And that is just, I think that says it all, doesn't it, right? Tells you everything that you need to know about these guys. Why even bother with all those drugs if you couldn't even beat the stupid, non-drugged up, normie athletes? And now they're taking all the cool money without compromising their career in any other form of sports. They're taking drugs, wearing illegal suits. So what's to stop them from going even harder? I mean, it's the cheating Olympics. I want new and innovative ways of cheating. I want to see like Dick Dastardly level cheating, you know what I mean? Inject fish hormones. I mean, you have less sense of bravery and curiosity than Kim Kardashian trying to defy aging. If Kim Kardashian can inject salmon semen, then you can turn yourself into a fishman hybrid for my betting and viewing pleasure. I expect full animal-human hybrids, cheetah men destroying world records with their spotted man-creature hybrid legs. Go full Island of Dr. Moreau with it. Go zoological or go back to the regular Olympics, you cowards. And if drugs aren't your thing, and they're not for everybody, well, there are always robot enhancements. leg enhancements that can speed a man up like a car. Actually, you know what? Just replace his feet with wheels altogether. Attach an amphibious engine that can propel an athlete across land and sea and pump pistons of strength. Combine all three events into a combination engine test and marathon athletic expression. More a tech show than a real athletic competition, if you break it down, really. But once you start going beyond the limits of the human body, why would you stop there? Go hard or go back to the Cowards Olympics. Strap a rocket engine to a man and let him burn up the competition like Wile E. Coyote. Get creative, you cheating motherfuckers. More on this next year as the cheating Olympics will inevitably return. And that's the end of the episode, my friends. I do have a bonus story for you, a fun one, about yeast. See if you can even figure out what that means without having to go to the Patreon. So if you're interested in this thing, if you enjoyed the episode and you want more of that, do go sign up to the Patreon. We have a number of tier levels that you can sign up to, which will get you access to the bonus stories. So it's a little bit of extra of this. And if you are up for it, please come out to one of my live shows. I'd love to see you out there. At the moment, it's just the Melbourne Fringe that's coming up, but who knows? We're trying to lock in more festivals as we go. Thank you so much for your support and listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Goodbye. Thank you.